All the Economic Development, Trade, and Tourism Committee is called to order, and the time is 11:15. Welcome, everyone, and thanks to Betsy on my left, our LIO monitor, and Debbie, our secretary on the right. And for the record, in attendance are Representative Higgins, Representative Johnson, Representative Olson, and Representative Gaddis. And several members will be arriving late due to the fact that we have other committee meetings still underway. And so for this reason, we're going to be flipping the agenda from what we originally sent out, because we need a quorum in this committee, that would be five members, in order to hear legislation. So today, the agenda...
You didn't count yourself.
Oh, and I'm on the roll, too, Representative Hughes. Thank you, Representative Olson. Okay, so...
My pleasure.
So today, first, we're going to be hearing from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, and Tyson, the communications director, will be providing an overview, and before he does, Commissioner Bell will make a few comments. And then we will hear House Concurrent Resolution 1, presented by Representative Stoltz and his staff, Daryl Breeze, and we'll follow that with the public testimony. And I just will insert here that the general rule that I will be following in this committee is that we will hear legislation on one day, and then we'll hold it to give us a chance to digest it in case anything comes up before moving it out. So first, I'm going to ask Commissioner Bell to please come up and state your name for the record and provide your comments.
Thank you, Chair Hughes. For the record, Susan Bell, Commissioner of the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development, and I appreciate the opportunity to make a few comments about the department, because I know as we kick off EDT&amp;T's committee meetings today with ASME, you'll be seeing many aspects of our department as we go forward. So I'd like to just frame the discussion as we talk about economic development and the urgency we certainly have in this state to diversify our economy, create jobs, and attract investment. And broadly, in the Department of Commerce, we're working to address energy costs through a wide array of programs. We're working towards development of strategic infrastructure to develop our resources and get them to markets, and that includes road, rail, ports, communications. We're certainly, with ASME here today, very focused on marketing Alaska's goods and services. We really need to create demand, build connections between Alaska providers and buyers, and that includes seafood, as you'll hear about today, tourism, minerals, forest products, film, transportation, and again, just helping make those connections from Alaska manufacturers and businesses to markets around the world. And we're also working towards creating a solid foundation and an attractive business climate, and really working towards low taxes and fees, stability, reasonable regulations. And so as we work with different committees, again, I know that the Economic Development, Tourism, and Trade will be particularly focused on economic development activities of the state and how we work with the private sector. And I'd like to just briefly talk about our tactics. One of them, I think a real key area, is marketing. And we have been really working towards, across the department and other agencies, collaboration with a number, and you'll hear that carried through Tyson's comments today, collaboration with the private sector, collaboration with other agencies. Also, a key pillar of our economic development activities is financing, whether it's commercial, at the commercial level, larger businesses through ADA, or our suite of small business financing programs through the Division of Economic Development. We also do a lot of market research, economic analysis, and simply providing technical assistance and training and connecting businesses to state and other services. So again, thanks for the opportunity to provide a little bit of an overview to frame Tyson's comments, and I look forward to to continued presentations in this committee.
Thank you, Commissioner, and I appreciate your making the point to do that, because we will learn more about your department, and typically, often that broad overview is given first before we get down into the nitty-gritty, but we are going to get a little bit into some nitty-gritty. So Tyson, if you'd come up, please, and state your name for the record, and provide us with your overview, please.
Okay.
Thank you. For the record, Tyson Fick, Communications Director at the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute. And thank you, Madam Chairman, and members of the committee for having us here.
Tyson, let me ask your preference with this. I think it might be best if we allow questions during your presentation. Are you okay with that, or would you prefer they be saved until the end?
Yes, I am.
Yeah. During?
There's an awful lot of slides to get through, and I'm sure by the end we might have forgotten questions, so,
okay, so
I'm happy to take questions as we go.
Okay, thank you. So members, you're free to let me know if you have a question.
Okay, so starting off, I'm just going to talk a little bit about the ASME board structure, a little bit of the industry and the economics around fishing right now, some challenges, and then get a little deeper into each of the individual programs and how we operate. This slide is just a quick glance of what some of the things we have going on right now, this week, in the past week. Promotions in France and Spain, China, Brazil. Seafood Technical, our technical director, is on a two-week mission to Europe, talking with some of our bit larger suppliers specifically about sustainability. We've got food service and retail working on video shoot with Food Network that'll be part of our consumer advertising rollout coming up. And then the communications, I was up at 5:30 in the morning talking with a marketing class at Oklahoma University about a project where they've taken Alaska Seafood as their project, and we'll be working with how do we get Alaska Seafood to be chosen in places where it's not the preferred protein. It makes a lot of sense in a beef and pork kind of a place that we need to work into developing those new markets in the U.S. Number of press interviews, and all the time we're preparing for all the upcoming projects and shows and whatnot.
Allow me to interrupt for a moment, Tyson. Let the record reflect that Representative Drummond joined us at 11:22. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
So we are a public-private partnership of the state of Alaska and the Alaska seafood industry. We're governed by a board of directors that's appointed by the governor. And we're Alaska's official seafood promotion arm. And our single focus is on increasing the value of Alaska's seafood resource, as reflected in our mission statement there. Here's some of the important statutes that we work under. We promote Alaska more generically. We're specifically prohibited from promoting any geographic region or specific brand that sells Alaska seafood. Of our companies, and that's for obviously very good reason. And then the Alaska Constitution, I always like to point out that when we became a state, we put the notion of sustainability and sustained yield into our Constitution over 50 years ago, and it's not a 10-year-old marketing construct, as some folks have caught on with that whole sustainability and food movement.
Thank you. I'm going to interrupt again to let the record reflect that Representative Pruitt has joined us.
This is just a quick look at our funding and the current budget request. We are restricted on the amount of spending allowed, and with the intent that we're supposed to be carrying some money forward into the next year, and specifically work to build a little bit of a war chest, because the federal funds are certainly at risk and everybody is in that same boat. But our spend plan is about $22.5 million for the coming year.
Tyson, could you please, the voluntary tax. So that is, if you back up the slide, that is optional then for members?
I believe it was 2003, and our finance director, Naresh, is with us. You could remind me if I'm right. Is that correct, 2003? It was voted in that the tax structure changed. It used to be 0.03% paid across the board, and then a 1% tax paid specifically by salmon. So that kind of created a real interesting dynamic where the salmon guys are going, well, why am I paying to promote pollock, for instance? Well, then it was, at the same time, the board was changed. It was 12 harvesters, 12 processors, and one tiebreaker. So you can imagine trying to wrangle a 25-person board and then lots of acrimony about how the money is collected to perform the marketing activity. there was a vote taken, change the board, restructure the tax, and at any time, if the industry gets together and decides that ASME's not worth it, they can get together and they can vote us out of existence. So that's kind of how that came about.
So just to clarify, so the voluntary is that the board has decided there will be, it has chosen to
all of
implement
the
tax, so it's not optional for the individual members.
Right. Once the vote was taken and the tax is taken, now everybody that processes fish or sells fish directly, like a direct marketer, then they would pay into this marketing fund. If the decision is made to go back and revisit the issue, then they could vote out the tax and basically eliminate ASME at that point.
Right, and thank you. And it's good for us to see that those industry funds, and that's where the tax is going on the line there, that is the bulk.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Higgins.
So when we're talking about the voluntary tax, you're talking about the general fund right there, that number there, that's what's been the number that...
Through the chair, Representative Higgins, that's the industry funds and carry forward line.
So the $17 million then is what's collected every year, or because you say carry forward. In other words, how much is that carried forward? How much is the industry putting in per year?
Through the chair, it depends on what the X vessel value is. So the more successful we are at raising the value of seafood, then the more money that is collected, 0.05% of the X vessel value. So this year, 2011, was a particularly high year. We had an X vessel value of about $2.2 billion, which is a historic high. Most years in the last five are closer to 1.7, which puts us in the $8.5-$9 million range. Yeah. This year is a much higher year.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Continue. Here's our board. These are the voting members of the board. There are also four ex officio members, one from the governor's office, one from the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development, one member from the House of Representatives, and one member from the Senate. There's five processors, two harvesters. Four of the processors are what you would consider large processors, and one small, and that's Quick Pack Fisheries, Jack Schulteis from Emonic on the Yukon River. Also feeding into that are advisory committees. These committees offer specific industry knowledge in salmon, halibut, sable fish, shellfish, whitefish, and identify specific market points and pressure areas that need to be addressed. I'll talk about some more about that later, about what some of those areas are as it stands. And then the operational committees take that and look at their specific markets, food service, retail, international, for instance, and make recommendations to the board, which makes the actual allocation decisions of where the resources are going for the organization. Here's what it looks like on our org chart. You have the species committees working up through the operational committees to the board, but then on the side there in purple is the customer advisory panel. And that's something that's unique that's come up in the last few years, is we've asked some of our largest seafood customers to join the board and the staff to talk about how we're doing, how we can improve, how what their view of the world is as far as the future of seafood and how we stand in the marketplace. And that's been a terrifically valuable sounding board for us when it comes to a variety of issues, to hear it directly from our biggest customers. It goes without saying that we look for every opportunity when it makes sense to coordinate marketing efforts with other groups that are working to market Alaska. For instance, we've got a long list of things we've done, the Great Alaska Seafood Cook-Off. There's a television show that's airing now that we did a lot of work with the tourism program on. Ocean Mysteries with Jeff Corwin, we worked with the tourism folks on. He's a ecologist, so to help tell the story of the sustainability efforts going on in Alaska, it was a great opportunity to get all across the United States. We work with the Sea Life Center, the Salmon 30 Salmon, painted another jet with the Alaska Airlines. And then UK events, Germany, Japan. But then also we work with different departments like Fish and Game, DEC, NOAA, EPA, FDA, in terms of contamination issues or recalls or things like that to help those departments tell the story and like what the effect is in the marketplace. Now we'll shift gears a little bit to just sort of a quick overview of where the status of the Alaska seafood industry. In 2011, it looked at 52% of the total U.S. harvest. But if you take that on a global scale, it's less than 1%, or less than 2%, sorry, which kind of underlays the importance of marketing. It's the state's largest private sector employer. It's the state's largest export. And very important specifically to rural communities where most of the fishing activity happens. Many places, it's one of the only ways to have a wage-earning job outside of local government or the school. And then it was speaking with Jim Jansen from AML, who says by his back of the napkin estimate, because of the shipping of seafood leaving the state, it allows products to come back this way. He estimates about 10% cost savings because of seafood leaving Alaska.
Tyson, I'm sorry, 52% of the seafood in the U.S. is from Alaska. What is it worldwide? What is
less than 2%.
Less than 2%. Okay, thank you.
Here's what the composition of harvest.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, and I apologize for being late. Explain the 10% leaving the state and coming back. That slipped by me.
So because so much frozen seafood leaves Alaska, and it's one of few things that leave on the backhaul of all the barges that come up here with goods, it allows the cost of goods coming to Alaska to be lower by about 10% is the estimate.
Okay, because we pay for the shipping southbound or outbound, and they're able to keep
empty.
Their costs lower all the way around.
Exactly.
Okay, thanks.
Here's the volume of harvest, and you can see specifically that pollock, ground fish like sole and cod is about 80% of the total harvest, pollock being more than half of the volume, and it's the largest commercial fishery in the United States. It is by value, and I see I got a typo there. I have 2.1 billion, it's 2.2, maybe even adjusted up even farther now, with and counting all the federal fisheries that aren't actually landed in the state. But there's, you'll see that there's some more high value. For instance, salmon, you go back, is 14% of the harvest, but 31% of the value. And the inverse is true of the pollock. And then halibut and sable fish, being 1 to 2% of the harvest, is more like 17% of the value. When we talk about export markets, this infographic, I think, tells the story just instantly without looking at a lot of spreadsheets. You get the notion of it right away that a lot our seafood goes all over, and it's a huge global market. But still, the United States is roughly half. And then the green lines are re-exports. So a lot of seafood goes into China, back into the United States, into Europe, and all over. And some, we just opened an office in Brazil because we sell an awful lot of cod to Spain and Portugal that gets processed into salt cod and then shipped over to Brazil. So there's a real opportunity in the Brazilian market. Here's the Alaska salmon harvest over the last 100 years plus. The red line indicates the hatchery stocks, which accounts for about 30% of the total salmon harvest in the state today. There's a couple important dates on this timeline. One, statehood, right? And then in 1976, the Magnuson-Stevens Act, which is, as you can see, is the lowest point in the salmon harvest. And at that point, the state took over management from three and pushed it out to 200 miles, which essentially pushed out the out-of-country fleets, and we could start addressing things like bycatch.
Why, and I think it was 1990, can you go back? It was down considerably. What accounts for that?
I would have to get back to you on that.
I'm just curious. That's fine. Thanks.
Okay. This graph sort of shows a few things. You have global salmon supplies, the bars. The average ex-vessel price of Alaska salmon is the gray line. And the farm salmon wholesale price is the white line. Because of differences, we had to create a price index, but it gets the story across that even though there is increased supply throughout the world of salmon, the value of Alaska salmon is going up. And that's not the case with farm salmon, which is more of a commodity, and we've developed a very strong niche in the market and a preference for wild salmon. And what that's done, as salmon has increased in value over the last 10 years, has really increased the value of fishing assets. Permit prices, people investing in new boats and new boat construction, things like that have more than tripled in the last 10 years. But it's not all rosy. There certainly are challenges. Economic unrest, particularly in the European Union, has had a very strong downward pressure on price in that market. IUU fishing, that's illegal, unreported, and unregulated fishing, particularly Russian king crab, is one that comes to mind. The illegal Russian king crab fishery is larger than our entire legal fishery in Alaska. And it is increased this year, and by many estimates, it has created about a 25% decrease in ex-vessel value for our fishermen by having all that crab on the market.
I'll let the record reflect that Representative Herron has joined us. Of that illegal, is that happening within our waters then? You said it exceeds the size of our fleets?
That is not in our waters. That would be in Russian waters, but how we know that that's happening is a discrepancy between trade data and published quotas for the Russian legal harvest. So they say they're catching about 10 million pounds, but then somehow in a loaves and fishes story, there's 20 million pounds being exported all around the world.
Representative Tarr has also joined us. Sorry about that.
Another challenge that we face is the global whitefish supply, particularly Barents Sea cod. It's one of the great stories of the ocean is the rebounding of the Atlantic cod stocks, but it has put a tremendous strain on our local cod fishermen. Again, the increase in the Barents Sea cod quota is larger than our whole Alaska quota. And with all that on the market, it's really taking a beating on the cod prices in the global markets. Farm salmon supply is way up. Chile has come back online in a big way. Norway is expanding, and then there's the GMO thing looming out there. And there's competing proteins. Imported seafood being one. America, we consume about 90% of the seafood we eat is imported. Norway, because of this large cod increase, well, they've got a $1.8 million cod promotion in the United States alone, something to the tune of a 3 to 4 million cod promotion in Germany. They're coming right after the U.S. market.
Tyson, I'm sorry, the GMO, what is that acronym?
Genetically modified organism.
Thank you for that. I just want to say you have about 5 minutes. I'm sorry, because I know you have a lot of fascinating. We do have Representative Stoltz waiting online, and we have a bill that's up, so.
I'll jump straight ahead to the biggest challenge that we view right now is the proliferation of eco labels and what has happened with the salmon withdrawal from the Marine Stewardship Council certification program. So why withdraw? We want to maintain market access. We don't want to give up NGO control, the fishery management process. We view that there is brand erosion and ongoing and increasing cost of certification. Now, what has happened with the insert into fisheries management? Well, there was a push to break up the management into 64 discrete units, and language and packaging in UK claiming co-management. And then the hatchery program is under attack. And if you recall, the 30% of the salmon harvest is hatchery. Well, that makes a pretty big deal about making it economic to be a fisherman. So what is the appropriate role? And this is one thing that that came to us. There's the Board of Fish. There's the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council. That's the place where you would ask for guidance from the FAO, you'd stakeholders and NGOs. But what's happened is through these certifications, you put a roadblock between the seafood product and the marketplace. And if you have control of the market to where if we can't take our product to market without a certification, well, then that NGO that has control of the market can impose whatever they want as far as mandates on fisheries management. At the same time, we've seen some disappearance of the Alaska brand, where MSC replaces Alaska. And this is particularly troubling as the Russian pollock fleet is on the verge of certification, because the official species name is Alaska pollock. So you could go out in the market and say MSC certified Alaska pollock, and it could be from Russia, but it would still be legit. And at the same time, they don't have observer coverage that's paid for by the fleet. They don't have any plan to reduce bycatch. They don't have worker safety rules, and they operate in a much lower price competitive situation, where then we're back to being a commodity and performing just on price. The founder of the MSC, one of the MSC founders, had some pretty good threats about what was happening when we decided to go a different route. The current situation, in a nutshell, is that retailers are really being more and more accepting of the FAO-based responsible fisheries management certification and have begun to recognize the value there. And why would they want to usurp our brand? Well, it's very strong. We're second behind Angus Beef and Oreo, ahead of Oreo on U.S. menus. The technical program,
yeah.
Quick deal.
Yeah, congratulations. That's amazing.
I'm going to rip through a bunch of slides real fast to show some kind of visual of some of the things we do. Macy's has several stores, cafes in their stores. They ran promotions with us and saw tremendous success. Here's an example of something we're doing with Arby's and Carl's Jr.'s, and there's a lot of opportunity in the quick service restaurant. K through 12 pilot project we're doing with Sodexo. And some of the marketing materials, we also work with universities and do fun things like the world's longest fish taco, longest sushi roll. We did the largest seafood stew recently. And here's some of the merchandising materials that we make available to the folks that we work with on the food service side. Menuing ideas, you should have some things in your packets where we help train chefs on proper ways to handle fish, as well as easy menuing ideas that may help them turn a profit and have people have a good experience. We offer consumer research, retail side. We work with every major retailer around the country. We try to develop a partnership and have our materials available both for their web presence as well as in store. Here's some of the point of sale, and you probably see these case dividers in Fred Meyer and around when you go. Here's an example of the Hy-Vee, which is a Midwest chain, decided to feature Alaska king crab over the Russian king crab. They bought in huge bulk, and this year they saw a 200% increase and sold over 300,000 pounds of king crab just in the holiday season. Training, trade advertising, we do shows. There's the jet in our target markets. Consumer relations, we're in the news, but then we're also in the industry news, and this is where you really see some of the background of the market. Is that we work for the Chef Alliance, developed a network of chefs to help us develop recipes, and we do press trips, social media, app developments, Cook It Frozen. If you have an iPhone, go to the App Store, Cook It Frozen, hundreds of recipes where you can cook seafood straight from frozen. We offer photos to our members, and these kind of resources are really important to help develop web pages and have and advertising campaigns. Food photography as well. As I mentioned, the Great Alaska Seafood Cook-Off this year will be May 8th around our board meeting in Anchorage. Make sure to get you guys all an invite. It's a really great event. Crisis communications, when something happens that puts casts a pall on seafood, we'd be the ones to speak about it. Global Food Aid Program is I'm sure something we could spend some more time on. International, like I say, we're in 21 countries. Here's our main markets, some examples of our promotions, chef seminars. We bring folks over here and give them tours. In general, here's what it looks like. We got ice in the water, but the seas are fair, and I feel pretty good about the seafood industry and the future of ASME. And when I'm asked about what I do, I always have to put a picture of my kids in everything I do. But why we do this, why, they ask me. Well, the best thing I found was in one of their poem books that was called The Codfish. The codfish lays 10,000 eggs. The homely hen lays one. The codfish never cackles to tell you what she's done. And so we scorn the codfish while the humble hen we prize, which only goes to show you that it pays to advertise. So we do. And thank you.
Thank you, Tyson. It sounds like you've read that to your kids a few times. You've got it memorized. Great photography, good presentation. Sorry we rushed you. Some of those food photos, I think, were making some of us hungry. I'm rather than opening up to more questions, I'm going to ask that if you want to discuss more, we can do it at a later meeting, and I'm sure Tyson would be happy to take questions.
Anytime.
After the meeting or any time. Thank you very much. Yep. And so we'll move along to House Current Resolution Number 1, which we will consider. And to present the resolution is Representative Stoltz online, I believe. Representative Stoltz, are you online?
Present and accounted for, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you, and I hope you're feeling better. And we have Daryl Brees, who's come up to this table. He is staff to Representative Stoltz. So if you will introduce yourself, state your name, and introduce the bill, please.
Yeah. Good morning, Chairman Hughes and the committee members. Bill Stoltz, I represent District 11, which is Southern Rural Mat-Su and Chugiak, encompassing a lot of the farms. I used to have quite a few more farms until redistricting, and they were ably placed in another capable legislator's district, that being the member who's chairing the committee. Lost my Springer Loop farms, where much of Alaska's agriculture activity. Frankly, the reason I brought this resolution up again is because I think it's important that we integrate the resources that we have within our existing departments and agencies. I think we're very capable of doing a lot better for agriculture and food policy in general if we have some better coordination. And I'm not patient enough to wait for the Director of Agriculture to step forward with anything visionary. So that's why I've brought this forward. Was approved by the House of Representatives last year. I think it picked up 30-odd co-sponsors and sailed through the Senate until the very end, and it went the unhappy fate of a lot of good things there. That's today's new day and another story. The resolution is pretty explanatory. It probably has more whereases than most, because I wanted to specifically pinpoint the departments, agencies, and groups that have a role in agriculture, some of them not as obvious, all the way from health and social services, which administers WIC programs, to corrections, which serves a lot of meals. And I've been very active in trying to gently prod them to increase agricultural purchases on a competitive level. I've been fairly successful in magnitude, but I still haven't done enough. In FY08, corrections purchased $32,000 plus some change in produce. FY11, that number jumped up to $113,000, and probably didn't happen by accident. It took a lot of gentle prodding from our farmers, our wholesalers, and a number of other legislators, including myself. The resolution is pretty descriptive in what we're asking. We want our state agencies, with the aid of the University of Alaska, has functions to promote agriculture. The Young Department of Corrections, a major customer, especially with their upcoming new dormitory out at Goose Creek. We run into simple problems like why potatoes or some potatoes are eligible for WIC purchase and some aren't. And I want our Commissioner of Health and Services to be a lot more proactive. I want this just to be a routinized activity promoting food policy and agriculture in Alaska. And there's some good things that have happened last year in the capital budget. Put in appropriation for Alaska grown, Alaska wild seafood, and Alaska husbandry products. They had to be approved by Department of Commerce as truly Alaskan grown items. And we had, I'm not a guy that promotes stuff a lot, but this one has received a lot of accolades and success. And probably one of the big success stories wasn't in vegetables, but was the Caltech fishery that sold 4,000 pounds of chum salmon to the Colina School District, where in turn the kids in the culinary program benefited from a real affordable protein and learned a lot more where food comes from as they processed it and integrated it into their school lunch menu. So a lot of potential success stories for this. It's got wide support, and I probably end up diminishing that support by talking longer. So I'm available for questions.
Yeah, we do have a lot who want to speak to this, I believe, in favor. Just for my clarification, Representative Stoltz, I looked up the Alaska Food Policy Council, and how does this fit in? I know they're going to work together, but how will this fit, this working group, fill a gap that the Food Policy Council isn't currently filling?
Well, the Food Policy Council is a private group, and they asked to be included. And as I ran the resolution through last year, I didn't think that I had I just drafted that resolution up. I hand wrote it myself, so I know I didn't fill every gap. We added a lot of things, and they're a private group. I don't agree with all of their politics, but one thing we do agree on is we need to have a better Alaska food policy.
Okay, thank you.
They will have to. It's really going to be up to the administration to invite people in. This is a letter, as a resolution is. So I wanted to be as inclusive as possible.
Well, thank you, and that actually leads to another question I had as the sponsor of the resolution, since it doesn't state your preference as far as who would be on that working group or how the group would the membership. What is your intent that and how do you envision that?
Sure, I didn't want to. If this is going to be successful, the administration is going to have to read this resolution, agree with it, and take the handle. I didn't want to start naming members and have X number of farmers, X number of environmental activists, X number of DEC officials. I think for this process, it probably would have been cumbersome and counterproductive. This is really about getting government to reach out and work with these entities.
Yeah.
Not creating another commission. We're not really doing that.
Right. Yes, I can see that. Thank you. And I think it's, I know you had a lot of whereases, but naming all those departments, I think I counted 8 plus the university. It really does, if the governor chooses to implement this, bring a lot of agencies together. It really showed the scope of the impact that it could have across the state.
And Madam Chair, this my work product is not inviolate. If you have good ideas there, I think that's the way this proceeded in the last legislature. People brought forth good ideas and they were incorporated.
Okay, and is there anything more, Representative Stoltz or Daryl? Did you have something to add?
Representative covered it thoroughly.
Okay.
What I'll do is. I'll mute my phone and just be attentive for any questions.
Are there any questions from the committee at this time for Representative Stoltz before he mutes? Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Stoltz. This is a pretty exciting resolution that you brought forward. Even though I'm an urban Anchorage representative, I have a couple of farmers markets that meet in my district that are enormously successful. And I know that many of your constituents all around the table come to these markets and share their wealth of excellent food with excellent locally grown food with my constituents and many others who come into my district to go to these wildly successful farmers markets. It's my understanding that Alaska produces a very small percentage of the food that we consume in the state. I want to say I've heard that it's less than 5%.
Right here.
Very good. I'm glad that that is emphasized there. I apologize. I had not read it. I think we need to increase that as much as we can. And anything I can do to support that, I'm happy to do.
Thank you, Representative Drummond. And actually, I'll ask Representative Stoltz or Daryl, you may know this, but I remember hearing a percentage quoted for a few decades back, maybe the 1950s, that we were consuming about 50% of the food was from within the state. Do you recall something like that?
Yeah. And yes, Madam Chair, it's been a high number. Alaska, you know, Alaska's been a victim of a lot of efficiencies and better transportation. Some of the, you know, we've lost farmland. Some things that we grew here are more competitively grown elsewhere, and a lot of factors. But just like the with our way we sometimes don't produce things in the United States, that it has been a declining amount, and when Alaskans were a lot more self-sufficient, the number was a lot higher.
Okay, thank you. Are there any other questions or comments? Representative Drummond.
Yep. To continue, in the Anchorage School District has a tremendous food service facility that cooks and feeds food for 20,000 students a day. It's my opinion, and there are other districts that contain food service facilities. I'm sure Matsu, mm-hmm. with at least 15,000 students, has a similarly large facility. And just as we saw recently when the Hostess Wonder Bread Bakery went out of business, Anchorage School District turned to Matsu School District to bake their baked goods. I think we need to be utilizing those facilities 24/7, 365. When they're not feeding kids, they should be processing food and either freezing it for future service to students or using it to help feed the community, women and children program, all of that sort of thing. And I think this should be incorporated.
Thank you, and I believe Representative Stoltz, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that's part of what this working group will be addressing as far as recommendations regarding those opportunities. Are there any other...
Correct, Chairman, and taking the input from Alaskans.
Yes. Are there any other comments or questions so we can go on to public testimony? I just have one other comment that I've recently learned, and that is how the nutritional value of food declines the longer it is from the point of being harvested. And so when we bring up food from the lower 48, that it was harvested, you know, 7, 10 days prior and then sitting on the shelf, it's not nearly as nutritional for us as when it's fresh. And that kind of is a no-brainer, but it's something to remember because we all want to be healthy, and it's important for our kids, too. So with that, I will open public testimony, and we're going to start with out in Bethel. I have Susan Taylor with the – Susan, if you would please state your name and affiliation. And
she signed off.
Oh, she did. She had to sign off at noon. I was trying to catch her. So I believe she provided some written testimony. I want to just refer you to that. There's some great written testimony, and I believe she is one of those. And so I'm going to move on to Kodiak. And Lauren White, are you online?
No, we have Kevin Brenner here in Kodiak.
Okay. Kevin? State your name and affiliation, and I'm going to ask that we keep the public testimony to 3 minutes because we have a number of people who'd like to testify, and hopefully you'll be able to hear a chime, a sound when that 3 minutes is up. So, Kevin, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks to the representatives that are on this committee for allowing us to testify today. And I also want to particularly thank Representative Stoltz for bringing this resolution back before this committee into the House, and I'm hoping that it will pass through the Senate without problems this year. I congratulate you on moving this direction, and I think that this is a very, very good move for the state. I actually am, you know, Kevin Brennan. I'm the executive director of the Kodiak Regional Aquaculture Association. We are one of about seven regional corporations that run salmon hatcheries and do salmon enhancement projects across the state. There are also many non-regional private nonprofit salmon hatchery systems in the state. As the gentleman from ASME mentioned, hatchery production of salmon accounts for up to 30% or more of statewide salmon harvest, so it's quite significant today, and we do want to increase that and encourage the state to help us to help with food security and food resources. The unfortunate thing is a lot of people today view salmon hatchery systems as mainly commercial fishery driven, mainly profit based for a few commercial fishermen. But we have expanded our roles. We have looked at what kind of legacy we will be able to give to our children. And one of the most important issues we see facing the world today is food security. The United Nations Food and Agricultural Organization has stated that if there is a single food that could be used to address all the different aspects of world malnutrition, it is fish, the staple animal protein source of traditional fishers. We produce not only fish for the commercial fishery, but for subsistence, personal use, and sport fisheries as well. A good example, in Kodiak, we have a small community-based enhancement project that stocks sockeye into a what was a previously barren lake. Year before last, I don't have the numbers for last year, but year before last, a subsistence harvest or personal use harvest of fish there that was reported on permits was over 20,000 sockeye. So that's a very important source of food for local communities. We have sport fish programs that produce Chinook salmon and coho for the road system, which not only put fish on the table, but produce tourism dollars. We have a lot of wild stocks in Kodiak that are currently at low levels and suffering. We are trying actively not only to rebuild those runs, but through programs such as the one on the road system, we're able to produce alternate harvest opportunities for tourism and to encourage more tourism in the state of Alaska. So, the Kodiak Regional Aquaculture Board of Directors in December of 2012 actually passed a resolution that says, we acknowledge our role as a food producer and commit to working in a collaborative, multidisciplinary manner to address the issues and challenges of food security at a local, regional, and global level.
Kevin.
Furthermore, Kodiak Regional Aquaculture Association recognizes that food security is not solely about increasing food production, that safe, nutritious food must be supplied in a sustainable manner with minimal impact on the environment and cost to the consumer.
Kevin, we've hit the three-minute remark. Mark, do you have any closing comment? Very quickly, wrap up.
Certainly. I'm very pleased to see that the Department of Fish and Game is mentioned in here. They are the agency that helps manage the state hatchery systems and the private nonprofit hatcheries that are around the state. And while our types of organizations are not specifically mentioned in here, it does, and one of the resolutions speaks to working with nonprofit organizations. It does, that would cover the salmon hatchery industry in Alaska, because the salmon enhancement industry in Alaska, we are all nonprofit corporations run by volunteer boards of directors. So thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, committee members, for your time.
And thank you, Kevin, for taking the time. We'll move to Delta Junction. Bryce Wrigley, are you online?
Yes, I am.
Please state your name.
Can you hear me?
Yes, please state your name and affiliation.
My name is Bryce Wrigley. I'm with the Alaska Farm Bureau. And I just wanted to thank Representative Stoltz for reintroducing this resolution and encourage not only this committee, but the rest of the legislature to adopt it and the governor to implement it. When we talk about food security, it's really important thing that was illustrated and has been illustrated numerous occasions in spite of our transportation system and its efficiencies. We in Alaska are still subject to those disruptions and things that happened. That's, for example, what happened on the highway system in Yukon Territory last summer and resulted in the delay of food coming to Fairbanks. And it's happened in Anchorage as well. We are subject to those disruptions, whether man-made or natural. And the only way that we are really going to become more food secure is to produce a greater amount of that food ourselves. And so I just would like to encourage the passage of this resolution and then also its implementation. And I appreciate the opportunity to testify. I'm grateful to see that so many different and diverse agencies are included in the resolution. I always believe that if you could get the right people in the same room at the same time, then any problem could be fixed. And this food security thing is, I believe, a core requirement or a core mission of the state is to make sure that its citizens have food, shelter, and water. So this, on behalf of farmers, is something that would help resolve some of those questions and some of those problems, bringing those synergies into the discussion that we would like to see. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Bryce. Appreciate those comments, and I'm hopeful, too, as you, that we can have progress as we get folks in the same room. Also, in Delta Junction, Rex Wrigley, are you online?
Yeah, I'm here. I'll pass my time. Bryce just took my sales, but that's fine.
Okay. Can we assume then that you are also in favor of the resolution, Rex?
Yes.
Thank you very much. We appreciate that. And now I'm going to move to the Kenai LIO. Do we have Dean Hamburg online?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dean Hamburg, as I serve as Public Policy and Legislative Chair for the Alaska School Nutrition Association. Thank you, Madam Chair, for the opportunity to testify in support of ACR01. I also serve as administrator for the 83 USDA school meal program sponsored by the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District. Please know that President Ann Pennington for the Alaska School Nutrition Association and our entire Alaska School Nutrition Association support the ACR01. As a step towards improved food security for Alaska families. Any effort to bring a greater availability through resource development for Alaska local sourced and or processed foods is a very good thing for Alaska children and adults. Those of us responsible for producing the millions of school meals provided to Alaska students each year welcome any effort to increase the ability of Alaska food-producing entities to meet the growing demand for school meal programs. As approximately 43% of Alaska families qualify for free or reduced-priced USDA school meals, those of us challenged with meeting this need for school food supply too much depend on sourcing foods from outside of Alaska. We very much welcome the actions and efforts represented in HCR1 as a positive step toward bringing quality foods and increased quantities of Alaska foods to Alaska children served by school meal programs across Alaska. In school meal programs, our mission is nutrition for Alaska children. Any actions for improved resource development to Alaska foods security is much encouraged. HCR01 is a meaningful help and step toward the food security to Alaska's children. Thank you for your kind attention.
Thank you, Dean. We appreciate your remarks. And we will now go back off net and in Soldotna, Kate. Vay, is it Vay? Are you online?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, please state your name and affiliation and provide your comments.
I am Kate V. I'm representing myself. I'm a consumer, and I want to make my comments really short. I thank Representative Schultz for introducing the legislation, and I have just seen so much excitement about local foods around here. People really, really, really want it. And I think, you know, if the people want it, I think the government should support them. And I like to see it when the government and the people work together. So I just want to say I totally support this, and I just wish it the best. And thank you for the opportunity to speak.
Thank you very much, Kate. And in Homer, Kyra Wagner, are you there?
I just wanted to throw my two cents in there.
Can you state your name?
I'm not representing anyone, but my name is Kyra Wagner from Homer, and I thought I'd say some of the organizations I work with, even though I'm not representing them specifically, but just to give you an idea of where my perspective is coming from. But I'm on the Cooperative Extension State Advisory Board, so I get a little bit of the state view, as well as working with the local food work group of the Alaska Food Policy Council. I've listened in on some of their teleconferences and kept up to date with that. I also work in Homer a great deal with the Homer Farmers Market and Homer High Tunnel Growers. Down here we have over 250 people have received the NRCS High Tunnel grants, which has allowed them to extend their season and grow a lot more than they ever did before. So we've been networking a great deal down here, trying to identify our local food systems and what network capabilities we have down here. It's become very apparent that we have issues of needing more. If we're going to have small-scale production, we definitely need more. And if we are to get it out into the community, we need better distribution. There's labor issues. There are lots of things have come up. But what I'm really excited about with this bill is how it networks and creates a point of contact for this, all of this information that's going on. I'm just working in Homer, and I work with an extremely disparate amount of groups. Everybody's interested in it. It's like a universal language when you start talking about food. So I really appreciate Mr. Stoltz's broad vision of collaboration on this one. That's what it's going to take. And as far as like the Food Policy Council and other things, state level, I've really seen a lot of awareness that there can very easily be redundant systems going on. So to be having everybody work together and have it known statewide that there's a working group you can contact, a central location, that kind of infrastructure is really, really important for moving this forward. So I just really appreciate that vision and wanted to throw that out there.
Thank you, Kyra. We appreciate your sharing your viewpoint. And now we will move to the Matt Sue, Mayor Larry DeVilbiss. Are you online?
I am.
State your name for the record and give us your comments, please.
Yes. My name is Larry DeVilbiss, mayor of the Matt Sue Borough, farmer, former director of agriculture. And it's a pleasure to talk to you, Chairman Hughes, in your new capacity. And I appreciate Representative Stoltz bringing this forward. Having been involved in the farming industry since I was a child, I can testify to the frustration of being able to grow things but not being able to market them. And I'm just going to speak to the small segment of potatoes just to make a point. Probably since the 50s, Alaska's had the capacity to completely saturate the potato market up here. And yet, when it came to trying to sell those potatoes to the prisons, to the pioneer homes, the state agencies that should be first in line, it was often very frustrating. Even after there was the Alaska preference law that came into being, and I can remember as the director of agriculture, the near impossibility of enforcing the Alaska preference. And I know there in the past has been criticism that we were forcing the agencies to pay more than market value. Well, I can remember, especially in the potato markets, when we were selling potatoes up here for less than they were coming in from outside. And simply because of the market dynamics, it was impossible to get on the shelf. And I can tell you that the majority of farmers, and I understand how the markets work, because we've saturated this state for 15 years with carrots and even exported carrots. So I know the back door of all the stores in the South Central region. We use the ferry system. But it's really frustrating when the state agencies are the hardest ones to get product into. And as mayor, it's one of my objectives to really try to do everything we can to move our percentage of locally produced food way up above that less than 5% level where it stands now. So I just encourage you in what you're doing. I appreciate Representative Stoltz bringing forward the school program last year. I think the more we can create ready markets, the more we're going to see a new generation of farmers step forward, because the average farmer would just as soon not have to be out beating the street, knocking on doors, trying to sell it. We would have agencies that would pick that up if there were the market was looking for it. So kudos on what you're doing, and be glad to lend my support anytime.
Thank you, Mayor, and I hope with you that this is a dawning of a new day as far as working with state agencies in this regard in a increasing way. And also in Matsu out in Wasilla, we have Tafina Katkiss. Are you there, Tafina?
Yes, I am. I got kind of interrupted here with something from your guys' side. Okay. Good to be here with everybody.
State your name, please. Thank
you. Oh, yes, Tafina Katkiss, and I'm from the Matsu Borough, and I'm representing, I'm a consultant for the Matsu Borough representing agriculture here. I am also a farmer, and I have a farm. I raise raspberries, and I've gotten a community garden started in our area. I have great support for this, and I like to point out a couple things. One is this really is important to work together for getting the solutions that we need to be self-reliant here in Alaska. You know, we used to have years ago, trucks would bring products to Alaska, and we would have to depend on that, and we grow most of our food here. But what happens when that stops? Alaska is very unique, as you all know, and if we're not reliant, self-reliant, then we're going to have a major problem. I was thinking about farmers are really the unsung heroes. You can get by with some people with skills like doctors and that, but when you start losing carpenters and other, like maybe even the Wall Street, goes down and collapses, we could still get by. But if we don't have food, then we don't have security for our families, ourselves, our community. And I think it's really something important to work together. I also think that it's a great idea, and I support this resolution even as a citizen for myself, is that I've learned that you don't find solutions just in one person. The answer is not in one person, and you need to work together to find that. The answer is in many people. I think as you put this work group together, and I have expectations that we will have this benefit of working together, that you look at, number one, the environmental impacts is going to be a major factor in economic expansion here in Alaska. And the other thing is policies, you know, anything that legal, and that's where we can, you can make a difference, setting this up so that we have faster processes for entrepreneurs who want to start agricultural storage units or storage places. I want to say that, you know, I researched the production of Alaska-grown crops, and according to the Alaska Agricultural Statistics in 2011, there's listed the majority of farmers that are currently are producing their in the Mat-Su borough.
Excuse me, Tafina, can you wrap up, please? It has been 3 minutes, and we have quite a few others. So, yes, please wrap up. Thank you.
Okay. Well, I just want to say that we're in the borough, we're producing more than half of the state's local production of crops and meat. So I hope that you'll consider all the different regions and that they're all different and not just go with one cookie-cutter approach. And it looks like you guys are already looking at that, trying to diversify and outreach with your groups. So thank you very much. I am very much in support of this.
And thank you for giving us your time. And now for my mayor in the great city of Palmer, Alaska, Mayor Johnson, are you online?
I am. Hello, Shelley.
Hi, state your name for the record.
Hi there, Shelley Hughes, Chairman Hughes, committee members. My name is Delana Johnson, mayor for the city of Palmer, representing the residents of the city of Palmer. So nice to have you in Juneau, Representative Hughes, and this is a great first resolution to start your legislative career with, and I'm so excited and so appropriate to have in your committee. I want to thank Representative Stoltz for bringing this forward a second time. I always appreciate his vision to address the needs of all Alaskans. And certainly, food is one of those things that is universal, nonpartisan, and deserves the collaborative effort that is being requested in this resolution. I just want to say, you know, Palmer has been the center of agriculture for a long time, but the fact is that we're the new kid on the block. 2015 will mark 100 years for Palmer having an agricultural research station. But that came a number of years after Sitka and Kodiak and so on. So I mean, this is a statewide issue, and it's been recognized that food in Alaska is important, vitally important since statehood. So this isn't something new, but something that applies to everyone throughout the state. So what I wanted to also make note of is we had a number of farmers, and I'm fortunate enough to have visited their farms, and these are definitely some hardworking, solid people doing their very best and the very most that they can do, and they've got some beautiful produce out there. We need to work together. We need to work as hard as they do to be able to provide markets for their produce. The number of hoops that are thrown out that they have to jump through that come from the government, from the federal government and local state government to be able to market their foods is something that this bill hopefully can help them through. It's not because they're not working hard as farmers. It's because there's just a number of state and other regulations that they have to deal with. So let's help them out with that. And I really want to encourage the governor to take a close look at this and put this together because it's needed. And it just, we have a valuable group of people doing a great job out there. And we need to show that respect to them. On the tourism part, I don't know if people are really aware of how much people want to come from out of state and see Alaskan farms. A number of people, I mean, all through their whole elementary school, they've heard of the Klondike, they know about the Alaskan Gold Rush, they know these big high points in Alaskan history, but the number of people that I have listened to from the Midwest suddenly realize that there's farming in Alaska and be tremendously fascinated by it and want to go on farm tours and so on is just, it's just amazing when they start to think about it because they haven't thought about it before.
Excuse me, Mayor.
Thank you, Shelley. Chairman Hughes, I appreciate your time.
We appreciate you, and I was tempted to give you a little more time, but I can't be partial to my mayor, so we need to move.
All right.
Thank you very much. We'll move to Anchorage, and Diane Peck, are you online? State your name and for the record, please.
Yes, this is Diane Peck. I work with the Department of Health and Social Services, and I'm strictly here to answer questions.
Okay, thank you very much. Danny Constantine, are you in Anchorage? State your name and affiliation, please.
Yes, hi. My name is Danny Constantine. I'm the state executive director for the USDA Farm Service Agency for Alaska. So I cover the entire state. I have an office in Palmer and an office in Delta. And we work with farmers all across the state. I'm also a member of the governing board of the Alaska Food Policy Council. So, Madam Chairman, members of the committee, thank you very much for allowing me to testify. I'm here in strong support of HCR 1, and I think a lot of things have been said already about Alaska's food system and sort of the problem we have when, as people have said, 95% of the food that we eat is imported. What are the implications of that? We really do have a food problem in Alaska, and I think people have discussed some of the vulnerabilities that we have, but I also wanted to mention what the implications of that are for the health of our population when we don't have access to healthy and local and fresh food. We've seen skyrocketing rates of obesity and other deaths from diet-related diseases like diabetes or heart disease. So this food system, this kind of broken food system, does have implications to our people. The other implication that it has, and this is speaking before the House Economic Development, Trade and Tourism Committee, is really the economic impacts that 95% of our food coming from outside has, and what the opportunities are, the economic opportunities to build a stronger food system, the jobs that could be created if we stopped kind of hemorrhaging all of our food dollars to the lower 48. So I just wanted to recognize we do have a serious problem, and that this resolution recognizes that, and it proposes one important solution. There are many solutions, but this is a great first step, because a lot of jurisdictions have recognized that coordination is an important step. And for state agencies to come together, all these different state agencies that all have something to do with food but don't really coordinate, I think will really make a difference. And improved coordination is really an important policy step. At the federal level, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, we're trying to do the same thing among all of our USDA agencies, improve coordination. At the local level, I think local governments, whether it's Mat-Su Borough or Municipality of Anchorage, I think all of these jurisdictions could help in coordinating all of those agencies that have something to do with food to come up with solutions. The Food Policy Council is really working towards coming up with policy recommendations, and we will be forwarding policy recommendations to the legislature as we work through our kind of a committee structure. But I think you can expect to see some recommendations to improve some of our infrastructure, to improve training opportunities that the state could provide. Procurement, as Mayor DeVilva said, the state can be a powerful procurement force in purchasing local food. In marketing, I was actually disappointed to
Danny,
hear Commissioner
excuse
Bell.
Excuse me, Danny. I'm sorry, you're going into 4 minutes. Could you please wrap up? We do appreciate your comments, but we have other people waiting, and we're over time already.
Okay. I just going to say I was disappointed that Commissioner Bell didn't mention, when she mentioned that the Department of Commerce has an interest in marketing some of Alaska's products, she did not mention food products. And this would be one thing that I think this resolution and the governor forming a work group, I think, could improve. So thank you very much for the opportunity to testify, Chairman Hughes.
Yes, and we appreciate your comments. And the last one I have off net is a friend and a former coworker. I believe Mary Sullivan, are you online?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Mary Sullivan, for the record, with Food Bank of Alaska. I'll keep my comments very short. We wholeheartedly support this resolution, agree that improved coordination is absolutely necessary for us to have a viable solution to the hunger problems in our state and food security issues in our state. And as many others have stated, there's lots of other benefits to this increased coordination and policies that could come out of increased coordination from a group that would be created by this resolution. So thank you for the opportunity to testify, Food Bank of Alaska, and many other anti-hunger advocates that we work with do agree that this is a very good resolution. And thank you, Representative Stoltz, for the leadership in bringing this forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Mary. Appreciate you keeping your comments succinct. And I want to thank those in the room who've been patient. We've had a long list of those testifying. So on my sheet here, I have Joe Baelish. Would you like to come to the table and state your name and affiliation, please?
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Joe Baelish, Deputy Commissioner at the Department of Natural Resources. We're here as one of the named agencies in the resolution to offer our support for the resolution, and are very appreciative of Representative Stoltz's leadership on this matter and question, and look forward to putting our shoulders behind the effort.
Thank you very much. And Darren Snyder, are you in the room? Please come to the table and state your name and affiliation.
I have some prepared comments here. They're in written form, but I have some typos, and so I'll submit them in written form and when I get back to my office.
That would be fine. Thank you.
Okay. My name is Darren Snyder. I am a governing board member of the Alaska Food Policy Council, and an extension agent with the University of Alaska Fairbanks. And I wanted to thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee for this opportunity. And also thank you to Representative Stoltz for reintroducing this resolution. I'm here to testify in strong support of HCR1. This resolution recognizes the importance to all Alaskans of developing a strong and secure food system that can provide jobs, support healthy communities, and increase food security to feed the hungry and insulate us from potential disruptions along the food supply chain. Over 130 Alaskans representing federal and state agencies, tribal entities, university programs, farmers, fisheries, food systems, businesses, and health and hunger agencies have joined the Alaska Food Policy Council because of our concerns of the many food challenges we face. We are looking for a way to tackle them in a comprehensive way. Some of these challenges, many of which have already been shared by Danny and others, our businesses see over $1 billion a year that Alaskans spend on food being exported to communities in the lower 48. These food dollars could be staying right here in our communities, putting people to work. Also, health professionals see skyrocketing rates of obesity and deaths from diet-related diseases like diabetes, heart disease, and cancer. Families and food safety advocates are worried about death and illness from contaminated food. Also, families and communities with high fuel prices are forced to choose between paying for heat or food, and food is losing many times. The vision of the Alaska Food Policy Council is healthy, secure food system that feeds all Alaskans, and our mission is to improve our food system for the benefit of all Alaskans. Initiated in 2010, the Alaska Food Policy Council is an independent organization open to anyone interested in improving Alaska's food system. Over the past 3 years, the Alaska Food Policy Council has been working to connect people from different areas of the food system, focus our attention on our food system problems, and elevate policy as a strategy for strengthening our food system. The Alaska Food Policy members have been working together to strengthen the local agriculture and fisheries product preference statute to increase the state agency's purchase of Alaskan agriculture and fish products. And Alaska Food Policy Council members have collaborated to pilot test a farmers market, quest, or food stamps program. 1 year ago, the Alaska Food Policy Council released our 2012 to 2015 strategic plan. And the goals of that plan are: all Alaskans have access to affordable, healthy, preferably local foods. Alaska's food-related industries have a strong workforce and operate in a supportive business environment. That food is safe and protected and supplies are secure throughout Alaska, and that Alaska's food system is more sustainable, and Alaskans are engaged in our food system. We are pleased to see the Alaska State Legislature support the work of the Alaska Food Policy Council and encourage the governor to establish a new state food resource development working group to include all of the listed state departments and the University of Alaska. Thank you for this opportunity to provide written testimony to the committee.
Thank you, Darren. We appreciate it very much. Jim Sackett, are you in the room? Please come up to the table and state your name and affiliation.
Madam Chair, my name is Jim Sackett. I'm representing Tagatili Corporation, and that's the Alaska Native Village Corporation of Nenana. We're here to speak in support of HCR1 and would like to ask Representative Stoltz to make a modification to a small amendment in his last paragraph where it says to work collaboratively with Alaska Native Regional Corporations. We would suggest that you add N Village Corporations, since the regional corporations own the subsurface estate and the village corporations own the surface estate where things would actually be grown, that we would add that amendment that the village and village corporations would be added to that. I'd like to speak to the rising cost of energy and how in the future that'll affect the cost to transport food, and it'll become even more important to grow our food locally instead of moving it thousands of miles, we'll move it several miles from the farm to the table. Also like to speak to Nenana's geographical center location in the state and how the infrastructure in Nenana, including the railroad and the highway, but the other the piece of the puzzle that we have that no one else does is the barge system to move food to the western cities through the three barge companies in Nenana. So keep that in mind for distribution, that it would be a good hub for that. That's all I have. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Jim. We appreciate your comments, and we will have discussion afterward regarding your suggestion. One final person, I believe, Mike O'Hare. Please come join us.
Good morning. Sorry, good afternoon, Madam Chairman. For the record, Mike O'Hare, I'm the Deputy Director of Homeland Security and Emergency Management for the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. It's an honor to be here. Good to see you again. And members of the committee. We are one of the named agencies in this resolution. I just want to compliment Representative Stoltz for bringing this forward. It requires in the resolution that the divisions and departments coordinate with each other to provide a food reassurance and utilization of domestically grown and harvested food. And I just want to assure the committee that we would certainly do that. That's exactly what we do, and incorporate locally grown and harvested resources, food resources, in our catastrophic food assurance plan. And I'm available for any questions, Madam.
Thank you very much, Mike. Appreciate your being here. Is there anyone else in the room who would like to testify? Okay, hearing none, we'll close public testimony. And is there any further discussion by the committee at this time?
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Herron.
Yes, I'd like to offer a conceptual amendment to page 5, line 9, following Alaska Native Regional, insert and village. So it would read Alaska Native Regional and Village Corporations to preserve.
And I'm going to object for the purpose of discussion. Can you have any further comments you want to make about the amendment? I know in public testimony you heard a little bit, but I want to give you a chance to speak to it.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think that the witness that testified said it succinctly. Village corporations have the surface rights in their respective jurisdictions, and it is, I believe, an appropriate amendment to this important resolution.
All right.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative Stoltz.
Yeah, I think the proposed amendment is a great idea. The language regarding the reference to ANCSA corporations was also suggested by public testimony during the last iteration of this bill, and I am anything that makes this more inclusive and more workable, I think, is a great idea. So the ANCSA language came from public testimony last year, much in the same manner as this testimony was just forwarded.
Thank you, Representative Stoltz. I was going to ask you, since you're the sponsor, about that, so it sounds like you approve. Are there any other comments?
Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative Herron.
I just want to say to the co-chair of House Finance and to you that it's important that we start off with food security legislation in this legislature.
Yes, thank you, Representative Herron. And at this time, I will remove my objection. Are there any other objections? And seeing none, the committee will adopt this conceptual amendment. And if I don't hear objection for moving the bill to its next committee of referral, I'll bring it up under bills previously heard on Thursday, January 21st, and to ask the will of the committee at that time. We will have a CS at that time with that amendment. Representative Tarr, did you have something?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Are we going to have additional discussion on Wednesday or just move it out on Wednesday?
On Thursday?
Or Thursday, excuse me.
We can open it up for additional discussion. We do have to vacate this room because there's another committee coming. And I just want to say I hope that this time slot works for everyone. It was pretty tricky. We tried to do it so it overlaps so people can come and go and we can catch you enough to get a quorum. And so we'll meet again at 11:15 on Thursday, January 31st, and we'll be hearing from the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. And they'll provide that broader overview that we talked about earlier on finance, timber, fishery, and the Made in Alaska programs. And so with that, are there any closing comments? Okay, thank you for wanting to be part of making Alaska one of the best economic environments in the nation. And so with that, we're adjourned at 11:43.